Good afternoon, Roadie Nation. We're back. WRIU 90.3 FM Kingston. Mark's Remarks here. I'm Mark Radigan. Back in the studio. It feels good. This is a nice week for URI Athletics, I have to say. Football winning the Governor's Cup, beating Brown. UConn and URI squaring off at Mohegan Sun. I think I saw six A-10 Rookie of the Weeks, Player of the Weeks come through across a variety of different sports. So that was pretty cool to see. So a great week in URI Athletics, the universe this week. So, but yeah, this week I do not have one of those six Player of the Weeks on the show today. However, I do still have a great guest. I'm joined today by senior midfielder and captain of the URI men's soccer team and the president of the Isaac Ostese fan club. I'm joined by Yvonne Montoro. Yvonne, how are you today?
Well, good. Thank you for that, though.
Of course, of course. I've been wanting to get the seniors from the soccer team to come on to talk, as obviously there's a lot of you. I think there's 9 or 10. So all of you guys have great stories, and you especially have a very interesting one. And, I mean, we were talking about this just before we hopped on. Just we're at this point in the season now where stuff's really starting to get real. The A-10 is in soccer is a notoriously tight conference, and the same can be said particularly for this year, as there are, I believe, 3 games left in the regular season. Senior night is this Saturday for you guys against the eternal URI rival in UMass. UMass have a couple pretty good players themselves, so that will sure to be an important game, and we're going to be getting into all of that very soon. But for starters, Yvonne, I want to turn the clock back a little bit. Obviously, you're one of the more senior members of this program and have a lot of experience playing with so many different players. But even before that, you've made a bunch of very important decisions in your life, even coming to the United States to come pursue an education. So I want to just go back and learn, where did it all start for you? Where did your love for soccer come from? And just how did you get into this position where the beautiful game became such an integral part of your life?
Well, everything started with, I guess, when my dad put a ball on the ground and I decided to kick it when I was probably like 2 years old, 3 years old. Like, I was barely walking also when I was like maybe 1 year old, I don't know. And, yep, I saw a ball on the ground. I tried to kick it, and my dad was kind of like confused because he never tried that. And, well, yep, one day I decided to tell my dad I wanted to play with my classmates when I was really young. I was a little, 3 years old maybe. And he decided to put me on there, like, on the team, to play with them, to have some fun. Obviously, my team was probably the worst in the league. But I was playing as a striker, and I was scoring a lot of goals for them. It didn't really matter. So, yeah, he decided to move me from theirs because he thought I was pretty good with that age. And, well, the journey started over there. Pretty much, he used to bring me to all these Spanish stadiums from Madrid also, and all of these stadiums that are really famous there. And well, the environment was crazy to me. The sport really impressed me, and I really loved that life. And I decided that I wanted to do that for my entire life till now, I guess.
And so when I had Edu Rodriguez, another member of the men's soccer team, another fellow Spaniard, when he came on a couple weeks ago, he was kind of talking about just how early you guys start in, like, the academy process and how competitive it can be from a young age. And you just alluded to, like, really going to see the different clubs in Madrid and in and around the city. And obviously it's one of the most potent soccer sporting cities in the world. Just how did you end up playing academy soccer? What was that sort of process like? We're going through tryouts with different clubs, and just how did you end up settling down with the academy you played for?
Well, from that team in my school, my dad decided to bring me to the town's team, right? Like, one of the best ones. And I was playing there for fun. Just, of course, it was kind of like a strict because everything I do in my life is strict. I try to give my 100%. And you start playing there. I stayed there for 4 years, more or less. And there are scouters everywhere. So you know, like Real Madrid scouters, Atletico, Rayo Vallecano, Getafe, all these scouts are around trying to catch new guys, young guys, and I decided to do the movement with one of them from Rayo Vallecano, which gave me a lot of attention, and I felt really, really nice, and I felt that I was going to be happy there, and that's how it all starts. You get in a wheel, which is academy, kind of like very professional, starts to get more and more difficult and more strict, and it's all scouts, people watching your games, a lot of pressure on it, honestly, because sometimes you're like in a rope and you must take all these opportunities. And right away, I kind of was a scout. I remember him. He was such a nice guy. He's doing good now as a coach. Atletico Madrid, more scouts. Real Betis is like all agents, movements. It's another world, different from here, no? And, sometimes it's not the best one, in my opinion, but you got to understand it.
It seems like a lot of pressure when you're playing these games and there's just so many different scouts that are watching you. And as a player, you start to notice that. Obviously, your family notices that. But as a player, you're like, okay, there's a lot of people watching me. Like, I want to make sure I continue to perform. At what point did you mentioned that you were a striker for your original team, scoring a lot of goals. At what point did you decide that you wanted to drop down, play more midfield? Was that something that happened after you ended up joining an academy, or was that something by recommendation of your dad or a coach or someone?
It was a recommendation of my town's team coach. He was there, and I told him I was playing as a striker, and I really like to play as a striker because he's the guy that scores the goals and he gets all the attention, right? So he came to me one day and he said, what do you think if you play midfielder? I said, well, I never played midfielder. I like to be a striker. I want to score goals. He said, okay, just try it. And from that moment, I started to play midfielder since then to now. So it's been a lot of years, and that's my position. That's how it is.
Do you ever miss playing striker?
Yeah, because I don't score goals no more. Like the way I used to do when I was younger, it was so easy to me to score goals, and I don't know why it's not anymore.
I mean, you got that one goal, what, 2 years ago that you had that that really long range shot, goalie was off his line,
yeah.
And you pulled up. I think that was
It was last year.
Yeah, last year. That was Holy Cross,
Holy
right?
Holy Cross.
Yeah, that was great. And I mean, you scored recently too. You got in on the action.
Yeah. But compared to those times, it's not anymore, you know, like
yeah.
One goal, two goals, you get excited, but it's not like you get used to it.
Yeah. And so going back to the academies and the scouts and so on. So you talked about having a lot of discussions with scouts from Rayo Vallecano. And so once you started to get on the radar of these clubs and their youth setups, what was that process like officially joining and beginning that sort of next stage in your career? What was the first club that you ended up signing for? And then just how did that progress on from there?
So the first kind of like contract, which is not contract, but it's for young guys, for new academy players, is it was Rayo Vallecano, of course. I stayed there for 4 years, I think. And then I decided to move to Atletico. And it wasn't an easy process because I was very happy in Rayo Vallecano. People rated me. I was so happy there, so comfortable in my comfort zone. So I didn't really want to leave, but there were some problems with some coach and the people at the office. And I decided it wasn't my place anymore. So agents also like started moving some teams. Atletico was one of them around. And, I decided to go to Atletico, and it was like kind of like a dream, right? Because, you know, first division teams, and you see all of that. You see those players close to you, and it's like a dream.
When you're making the switches from a club like Rayo Vallecano to Atletico Madrid, obviously there's massive rivalries between all of these clubs in Madrid, and you see that at the professional level. Do you see that at the youth level as well? Like when players make that switch, are people like, oh, like why would you go from that club to another? Like the little bit of like a betrayal sort of thing? Or is it not as intense at the youth level?
Let's say maybe when you were 13 years old, it's not that hard.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as you get older, it really matters. It's kind of like a loyalty contract, non-verbal, that they have between each club. That obviously between Atletico and Madrid is like the most untouchable people. But right away, kind of Getafe, Leganés, all these first division teams that are not like the other two,
mm-hmm.
They usually work with them. Like they got trades, they got agreements between players, because obviously it's the best for the guys, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes it's not like that, obviously. It's not beautiful, everything's not beautiful or easy. But those two teams, to me, like, it's very difficult to see one player from one team to another.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like from Atletico to Real Madrid. It happens.
Yeah.
But it's not like very nice, and it's not easy to see.
And so then you were at Atletico Madrid, excuse me, for a few years. What was that like? What were some of like the biggest differences or so as you were starting to get through the age group? Because you're obviously changing clubs, but you're going through different age groups at this point. And was this around the time where you started to think of pursuing soccer overseas, or kind of when you hit that split of many European athletes where it's like, okay, I want to play soccer, but I'm also looking to get an education? And the European system, as you know, obviously it's two different things. It's not like the same sort of track. You have to pick one, essentially. Mm-hmm. And that leads to the decision of like, okay, am I going to go to the United States to get an education and play soccer? Am I just going to pursue a professional career? So at this point, while you're at Atletico Madrid, are these sorts of thoughts and conversations with your family, is this kind of when it started to happen, or was it not until you ended up playing for Real Betis when that sort of began, you kind of had that thought process?
Being honest, it never came to my mind. Like, you, of course, you got like these people close to you, maybe from your same town or whatever, that they decided to go overseas and try to study at the same time they were playing. But when you're in that bubble, you don't even think about it. Do you think like it's a step back maybe? And to your soccer career. And well, I get older and I keep studying, which is something very important for me and my family. And I decided to transfer to Real Betis. And that's the moment COVID came. And it was a sticky one, right? Because, well, let's say that the money on soccer wasn't the same. The interest in soccer wasn't the same, and it was a sticky one for all the players, all the teams, all the clubs. And I didn't see myself playing there no more. And there was one day my dad decided to tell me what he was thinking about, and his thoughts were that I should leave that place. I should leave it because it wasn't being healthy no more for me. My mental health was completely down, and I wasn't having a great time. So he asked me, what do you think if you go to America to try to study at the same time you're playing? To me, it was like a breeze from the window, you know, like, mm-hmm. It was so nice. I was like, maybe a restart is what I need for my mental health also, and for everything in my life and my future. And yep, I decided to talk to agencies so they could help me out to reach to coaches and universities in America. Yep, I got this one of the first ones. They gave me a lot of confidence, and I felt very comfortable here. So I decided to take it, and here we are.
And so when you talk about your mental health being pretty low, I would imagine that's coming from the pressure of getting to that precipice of going pro, and these clubs are putting a lot of pressure on you because you go from being one of their prospects to now you're a bit of a commodity because now they want to make a profit on you if they see potential. Was at that point, did you still want to pursue a professional career, or were you getting so burnt out that your love for the game was starting to dwindle?
It's absolutely what you said. I had a lot of pressure. I felt like the pressure on going pro. It was the chances were going way low, and I don't know. I would love to be a professional player, but I'm also a realist, and I know that being 23 years old is not easy. I'll always chase that opportunity if I can. And if I cannot, I'll look for other choices, and I got no problem with that. I'm really realistic, and I'm not – I got no birds on my mind. Let's say that – I don't know. It would be beautiful to be a professional soccer player. It's a toxic world, if I'm honest. And it's not easy at all. Pretty toxic. But I wish, man. I'll try it, but it's not easy.
And so once you made that decision and kind of come to terms with that, you then decide, okay, you know what? Let's give America a try. Let's pursue an education, still being able to play soccer. It gives you that option, that sort of I can pursue both to an extent. And once you get with an agency and you start looking at universities in America, what was that like for you? And like, was it a lot of your own say in a lot of it in terms of, or let me rephrase, how much were you being like, okay, I want to go to this part of the United States, I'm looking for this type of weather, this type of program, or was it you were casting a wide net and just wanted to see what interest was out there?
Well, first of all, I was told that they give athletics scholarships, mm-hmm. let's say something like that. So I was trying to find the best choice for me, because it's obviously I'm not rich, and we are very humble there back there, and I just needed some confidence. For me, that's confidence.
Yeah,
the way they bet on you, they say, okay, we decide to give you this scholarship because it's, you know, they're trusting you. And I've always appreciated that. And there were some of them on the table. But honestly, I saw the campus. I saw the field. I saw the program. I saw how close we are from the ocean, how close I am from home also, because it's something important. And I really liked it. I really saw this place like my 4 years home, and that's why.
Interesting that you say you're home for the next 4 years, because that's not something that a lot of players, I feel, think of that much anymore because of just how the transfer portal is and the ease that comes with being able to just switch schools once something doesn't go your way, in a sense. But you talked about how URI was one of the earlier programs to reach out to you and say, hey, we're interested, we'd love to bring you in. Were there other universities that you were talking to at the same time that you were debating on or looking into as well?
Yeah. The first one was Cleveland State, I'd say. It was nice because the first offer is the one that makes you like to get so excited that you feel rated. But it didn't really impress me, and I wasn't like, oof, I don't really love it here. I had Missouri State. I had Tulsa. And I don't even remember. There were some others that were pretty nice. Honestly, they're top schools in the country. But they didn't give me the confidence I needed, honestly. There is like a private conversation there. I felt very comfortable with some of them. But for me, it's all about trust. And if I'm a very loyal person to the people that trust me. And of course, I could have transferred because a lot of people do it. And it's always like something happening every year. But if I feel like you trust me to give me the chance here, I won't leave. It's something like that. I'm gonna stay loyal to the program. I'm gonna stay loyal to the team, and I decided to do it like that because that's how my ideas are, and I'm sticking loyal to it.
Like to finish what you started. You, not to leave it incomplete.
Yeah, I'm not leaving the place because oh, I made a mistake. Well, nah, clearly not. I'm going to work for it. I'm going to work to change something if I don't like it. And that's been the process so far. And, well, I'm happy with my choices, honestly. I'm always going to be loyal to my ideas, and that's how it is.
Interesting. And so once you actually committed to the URI and you make your way over to the States, what was that initial, let's say, first 2 months like for you?
Poof.
Because I can imagine that coming to the U.S., maybe not speaking that much English, I don't really know if there were that many Spaniards on the team at that point. I know Raf was there, but didn't seem like there were that many. But to go to a country that you don't have much experience with, to a part of a very distinct part of the country, New England, very Rhode Island, very small state, very distinct sort of culture around here, to come over from Madrid to really assert yourself in this program, what was that like for you? How did you acclimate yourself?
It was probably two of the worst months I've ever had, I would say. Maybe not, but they were pretty bad. They were pretty bad. And I'm going to be completely honest with you. I spent like a month and a half, probably, or even two, asking myself, what did I do? Because it was also COVID year. And we didn't have class in person. NCAA didn't let me to play season because of some stuff they decided to do. And I couldn't play. I couldn't go to class in person. I didn't understand a single word. Because you think, as a Spanish guy, you think you understand English because in your school you learned English.
Yeah.
But you notice that, or you realize that you don't know, you don't understand what they're telling you or whatever. And I was having the worst 2 months. Yep. I will remember being in my bed at night, and I cried sometimes. I was having a tough time. You know, you just get over it. You just try to survive to the moment, get out of your comfort zone. You have to learn the language. You have to become stronger. Also from your mind, it's very important. Like, I decided that it wasn't me. It was my choice. I made that choice. I'm not going to regret, and I'm going to take it and go forward. And that's what I decided to do. And after that, everything went so much easier. Following season, I decided to play. I made really good friends that are very close to me. You know, you start knowing people here. COVID disappears. We got class in person. So it was like kind of like a storm. But I don't know, a couple of months later, it was like everything was clear again. And it wasn't like that bad decision I took, you know. So that's pretty much.
Were there any like specific instances or people that you looked to help you along the way? Because obviously, like you said, like it was a months long process to get comfortable and to really find your groove here. Were it like teammates, coaches, other Spanish speakers on campus that you got to meet, maybe walking somewhere on campus, even through the masks? Were there specific instances during that time that you look back on now that you feel helped you kind of get to where you are now?
The main man, I would say, he's been my best friend here. I became so close to him. It was Patrick Aguiman. He's playing for Charlotte now, MLS. He gave me everything at the beginning. You know, every time we would go to get food or dining hall or wherever, the workers would ask me what do I want or anything. I didn't even understand what they were asking for. And I couldn't even respond. He was my voice, let's say it's like that. Like, yes, you want this. Yeah, try this. Now you don't want this. Every time I needed something, his help was right there. I felt so much better with him because I could tell him, and he would help me out with a lot of language stuff and how university works. And yeah, man, that he was my savior for real, and I'll be so grateful to him all my life. Also, a lot of friends came after, Jordan Codua, the other captain now in the team, Patrick Wyczewski, Derek, all captain also, like a lot of people that I cannot name now that, wow, like they give me a lot for my life, you know, like knowledge and that help is always going to stay there, and I'm always going to remember that.
I love Pat. Pat's awesome. If those of you listening, part of the Roadie Nation, should know who Patrick Agyeman is, but Pat was a member of the URI men's soccer program up until 2022, right? Got drafted 12th overall in the 2022 MLS Super Draft to Charlotte FC, and he is now a consistent starter or bench player for Charlotte in the MLS. He will be a future guest on this podcast. We have been talking. He will be. I interviewed him my sophomore year of college here at URI. Easily one of the most fun interviews I've ever done. He's such a fascinating guy. But he will be making an appearance on this podcast later in the year, so stay tuned for that. But just having someone like Pat living with him, getting to, you know, become acclimated and just become a contributing member of the URI community off the field, that must have been massive for you. But that chemistry you developed off the field, how do you feel that impacted you as a player once you actually started getting into the groove of, you know, getting acclimated with your teammates? I keep saying acclimated. Getting comfortable with your teammates and getting comfortable with your with the program, your position, and so on. How did the chemistry that you established with guys like Pat impact you as a player?
Well, they, of course, talking about on the field, talking about soccer, I have no doubts about myself. I'm very, very humble. I'm a very humble person, but I'm very confident on myself. So to me, to myself, I'm the best player on the field. I'm the best player everywhere. I won't share it with nobody, but that's how I think. And I'm kidding. But I feel I know myself, and I'm a really good player. And sometimes you just need that push, or you just need that help to make you to believe you are that guy or you are that player. So once you feel very comfortable out of the field, everything is like showed on the field. And that chemistry made me to play as a 10 when he was playing on top. Something that I remember. I was like always underneath him and trying to get that ball, because I like to read the games. I like to read my teammates, and that's something I do very good, like read tactically the game. And that made me to play on top with him. So we had that chemistry that with his height. He was really tall, and I'm not that tall at all. So we could do some stuff there on the field and show the other team what we could do.
Yeah, you were a part of a pretty solid forward line in 2021, my freshman year, your freshman season. Yourself, Patrick, Isak. Isak ended up getting A-10 Rookie of the Year that year, and that sort of trio that you guys formed was very good. But that your freshman season, you obviously couldn't play immediately when you got here, and so this being your first year, you're instantly an integral part of this team. You make 17 appearances, you make 16 starts. How did that impact your confidence, knowing how difficult it was to get used to living here and everything else that came with that, but to then know that you can be yourself on the field? How did that impact your confidence?
I feel like it impacted the same way. Also, you always need your coach's confidence.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they are not with you, you don't have that confidence to do whatever you think is the best thing to do in that moment. And you really need that, first of all. Now, after that, I know how I am. I know my weaknesses. I know my strengths as well. I'll always have my family to tell me and remind me that. And yes, to know it is more than necessary, more than enough. Why? Because I like to give 100% on the field. I used to take a lot of time to learn that you need 100% on the field. And if I don't give it, I don't feel well with myself. And that day I will quit soccer forever. But that impact is very fast, honestly. It's very quickly, because, you know, like football is my passion. Well, sorry, soccer is my passion. And if you feel confident, that's everything.
And so as your minutes continue to go up and you ingrain yourself into this program as an integral part of the spine of this team, how did you see yourself developing as both a player and a person? Like, did you notice, or looking back on it even from now to back then, have you noticed any significant changes just in how you've been as like a person from coming over from Spain to now?
Yeah, it's all, I would say 95% of it is my head. It's talking about soccer, the way I read the games, the way I tactically take care of the team on the field, the way I read my teammates, the other players, and out of the field, I would say I grew up a lot, so mature. I feel like this experience has been very, very, very important for me. And my head has been very, very, like, reinforced after that. I would say it's my head is the most of it. Because my legs, obviously, you can have the ability on your legs. But yeah, it's all, you play with your head and your legs act however it wants. So that's pretty much.
And this being your senior season, you're going to graduate in December. You've had a very long and illustrious career here. I'm curious, just kind of going back over the seasons, and you've played with so many different types of players, you've had to take on so many different roles tactically for this squad. What are some moments and memories that you have that you look back on fondly that you feel really encapsulate like what you've been able to accomplish here at URI?
Important wins for the program. Let's say that as soon as I get here, we start beating UConn every time we play. This last year, I got to say that beating PC my first time in 4 years felt pretty good. Just for myself, it's not something like, it's not politics. It's not something like, oh, this rivalry against each other. It's just myself. It's, okay, one challenge left. And I still have some hope on getting the best memory ever this season, making playoffs, and, well, still get back there and do us the best we can. And, I don't know, you know, like, that would be the best memory for me so far.
And that PC game, it's always interesting, like, going back and, like, thinking of that game, because that was fun, because going to PC, not overly expected to really get a result, and from the way that first half was shaking up, it didn't look like you were going to, and then Jiggy comes up with a great goal.
Mm-hmm.
That second half for you, knowing everything that you've known over the past 4 years, knowing that you haven't been able to really get anything from PC games in the past, particularly last year hurt. That last minute win over Providence at home,
that one hurt me.
But just what was going through your mind during that second half as you guys were holding on to a lead? You started to really assert yourself in the game. It was a totally different game in the second half, and it seemed that Providence was starting to get more desperate. You guys controlled a lot more of the tempo. So just your thoughts playing one of the more crucial positions during that match. What was it like?
The first thought is we are winning. We are going to win. That's my first thought. Even before the game, I knew we were going to win. I just knew it. I had that feeling and I knew it. During the second half, everything to me, personally, it's about concentration. My concentration and my focus depends the rest of the team. That's my thought. I am the one that needs to be more concentrate. Don't miss a single ball. Don't miss a single spot. Don't miss a run. Don't miss a pass. And if I miss, it's gonna be like really hard because people don't expect that from me, you know. And I have to be the best one on the field to make my teammates to get that energy and follow me on that way. So I'd say I had to be 100% on the game. Like, nothing else mattered. It was just a game.
And once the final whistle blew, what was that feeling like? I saw afterward when I was going through trying to get pictures of all the guys celebrating, I saw you embrace with Coach Elliott.
Oh,
what was that feeling like?
It's the feeling of, man, I've been here for 4 years. I'm the captain because I'm the oldest guy here. Not the oldest, but I've been more time than nobody here, and I never did it. I never beat or straight rivals, you know, in the state. And that feeling it comes from inside. It's just, I finally made it. We finally made it. It's just, I can leave and nothing's going to stay there. You know, everything is out.
Yeah.
I made it. That's it. Let's go for the next one. But I'm good with myself.
Hearts out to Kevin. Kevin, your midfield partner, he is 0-5, or he's I don't think he's gotten a win in this matchup either.
Oh, yeah, I don't think so.
Kevin Castaneda was a midfielder for URI last year. Ends up as a graduate transfer heading over to Providence. That was always going to be an interesting battle between the two of you in midfield.
Yeah.
And luckily for you, you came out victorious. So hearts out to Kevin. Kevin unable to get that sort of win to, you know, top off the Ocean State rivalry. But, I mean, when you look at the matches that you've played, like, throughout your 4 years, like, you look at the PC games and so on, are there any just other matches that stand out to you that you're just like, that was great? That was just like a really, like, I, like, whether it was your own personal performance or just an overall team performance beside this PC game?
I'd say I was really impressed with UConn. It was my first year playing UConn there. We won 1-0. The stadium was absolutely full. People were saying everything to us. That feeling was like, I'm back to feel soccer.
Yeah.
On the best way. Like, people still there, a lot of fans. We got a good opponent, and you beat them playing defensive for almost 90 minutes. It's just such a good feeling that you can do that, and you made it, and you're kind of like unbeatable in that moment. I'd say that UConn game would be one of the most important for me, and I gotta go. We've played a lot of games, man. I don't even remember.
Like, what about one for me as a fan prior to working with you guys this season? St. Louis last year.
St. Louis.
That game was crazy.
Yeah, my problem was that I was hurt. I was kind of hurt. I just could play 10 minutes because I was coming back from an injury. That's why my memory is not like that good, because I was kind of like struggling.
Yeah.
But of course, I ended up running to Yigi after that goal, crossing the whole field just to celebrate it.
If only it wasn't raining that day. That the game that we're referencing, for those that aren't aware, 3-2 win over St. Louis. At this point, St. Louis are one of the best teams in Atlantic 10. One of the best programs in the country, for what it's worth. And a last second, like 10 seconds left, Patrick Krzyzewski bolts up the field, game winner, in front of no fans. It was pouring.
Yeah.
Everyone that was there were, I don't know, maybe like 150 people there when the game started.
Yeah.
Everyone disappeared. Everyone disappeared.
But it was raining crazy.
It was pouring. It was one of the worst games I watched. Just from like sitting, like being able to like sit there condition wise, easily one of the worst. I had never seen it rain so hard. But that must have been an interesting one. You go off injured, you play 10 minutes,
yeah,
you're hurt, but to then, no, all right, screw it, I don't care if I'm hurt.
I decided
running
to
over
run.
There.
When I was coming back from that celebration, it comes to my mind, I'm injured. What the fuck am I doing?
Oh, that's funny. And so just looking back at this season now, there's still a little bit time left in this season to get to that ultimate goal that you have of making the playoffs, winning the Atlantic 10 championship. There's so much soccer still left to play, and you guys have looked good. 7 wins on the year, and difficult losses, yes, to Duquesne and then to St. Louis most recently in A-10 play, but you have the pieces there. The defense, you've had a great defense all year. Even with injuries, guys that have come in to fill in holes have played well. The attack, the players are there. Yes, it's a little bit inconsistent at times, but you guys have found ways to get on the score sheet to get results. Looking back just on how the previous two seasons went, not making the playoffs in just, from your perspective, I have to imagine, is just completely dejecting fashion, and it must have really stung. But looking back at those squads and taking the lessons from those disappointments, putting it to this, knowing that there's still a chance, how do you feel about this current squad and just kind of what are some of your feelings for the next couple of games?
I don't know. I just know about myself because, you know, the team is kind of like we are having a tough situation right now with injuries, people that are coming back. I really think we're going to make it. I really think we're going to make playoffs and with no problem, not even struggling. We just need luck, a little bit of luck. That's it. Because injuries, it's all about that. We try our best. A lot of treatment, a lot of is stretching, a lot of everything, and we still get some injuries, which is not fair. Yes, this soccer is like that. But I feel very confident with the team. I got no doubt. I got no doubt we're making playoffs and we're going far. I hope it's the farthest I can reach. At least my last year.
And with it being your last year and you don't have any more college eligibility left, you've talked about how you would still love the opportunity to play professionally. But if that opportunity doesn't present itself, what are some of your ideas moving forward? Do you have a bit of a plan? Because I know for international students, it's usually a difficult thing to come to terms with because you either have to leave the United States or you have to find a job fairly quickly in order to stay. So kind of what's your plan, I guess?
Right now I have no plan A. Mm-hmm. I'm looking for options, of course. I don't know. Maybe I wanna do a master, or if I can find a good job opportunity, I'll take it. If I can keep playing in good conditions, I'll do it. So I'm open to all of these opportunities. I'm not stick to a plan. Right now I'm focused on finishing my degree, doing the best with the team, and that's it.
And going along with that, with the season trending in the direction that it could possibly end very well for the Rams this year, do you feel that if you guys make the playoffs and continue to go farther than the Rams have gone in the past like 4 years or so, even it went winning the A-10 championship, moving on in the NCAA tournament, or just progressing really far and putting a very good tournament performance together, do you feel that that would be the cherry on top, so to speak, for your sporting career?
Absolutely, absolutely. Because it's been the hardest challenge so far in my life, talking about soccer. And the cherry on the cake would be this season, like, and I can live like, I can leave my soul here and I can say, okay, I took part of this program. I did this. I could do it with the help of my team and now I can leave.
That's nice. And what does your sort of family think about all of this? Obviously, it's must be difficult for them to consistently come out here to see you play in person, but to know that the 4 years is almost up and having seen their son grow.
Yeah.
On TV and grow as this sort of person. Like, what have you had any conversations with them about? Just like, wow, this was a crazy decision a few years ago. Now it's all about to come to an end.
Yeah, Also, I'm an only child. Like, I got no siblings, so yeah. It's been harder for them, honestly. Because of course I gotta face challenges, but I'm the one that is making decisions, and they just gotta watch it from home. Yeah. You know, and they just. The only thing they can do is call me every day and ask me, how is it going? How is your injury? How's your game? How was your exam? How was everything? And I just got to tell them sometimes I don't tell them the truth, fully the truth, because I know everything is going to affect them more than it affects me because they love me a lot. So it's been harder for them. It's been really tough. Also used to have me in at home every time and bringing me to every practice, bringing me to every game, and now they cannot do it anymore. And see how it kind of like ended that way. Yeah, it's pretty tough. For me also, I miss those times. I miss those experiences. But that's how it is. That's life. You gotta move forward. Just take a look in the past, and that will give you the energy to keep going.
God, this is so bittersweet. I don't like this. I don't like seeing my friends be like this on the show. But we're getting close to the end of our time. I have one more question, more geared toward this. When you look back on your overall career, there were a lot of highs and lows. You played with so many different players. You got to experience so many different things. What is the legacy of Ivan Montoro to you when it comes to what you've accomplished as a person and as a player in Kingston?
I hope that people think I'm a good person, first of all. I really think so. Sometimes I think
you're a good person.
I think I'm a good person, yeah. I try my best. But sometimes you're going to be tough and you're going to be like that guy that, you know, you're going to show some respect sometimes. And it's part of life. I really hope so. I really hope they had like a nice captain that wasn't like a very bad guy. And I always try to help the guys. And I always, with my experience, I try to guide them a little bit. I hope they remember me as a nice player that took part of the program, and that pretty much like a Spanish that was here called Ivan Montoro sometimes said like Ivan, and that guy was pretty nice, or he was a good guy, just that. I don't like to be like very cocky. So,
do you have any imparting words of wisdom for any current younger Rams or future Rhode Island Rams that may be listening to this?
For young guys, I'd say athletes are not.
Yeah, more focused toward athletes considering the experience that you have. But I mean, it can be to anybody.
They can be two different lives. I'd say enjoy the moment. Because it's not coming back, not anymore. It's 4 years that you're going to have to make choices, and sometimes they're going to be tough, or sometimes you don't want them, and so you need discipline. That's for sure. The discipline is the most important part here, to take the exams, to study, to sometimes go to the gym, to lift. Sometimes you got to go to practice, and you don't really want to, but that's how it is, because after that you got to go to class, and then you get an exam, and then you're going to have a lot of stuff. But enjoy every single moment, even if it's not the best time of your life, even if you don't like what you're doing. And that's pretty much, I'm not like, I cannot give any advice because I'm not 80 years old or something, but through my life in college, enjoy every single detail and every single moment that you live here.
All right. Well, we're going to end it there. Ivan, thank you. Thank you for everything you've done for the URI men's soccer program. Thank you for always being just fun to work with. We obviously have a month probably left of working together, me working with you guys. But, I mean, thanks just for everything, for coming on. This was great. And best of luck to anything that you set your mind off to after you graduate in December, dude.
I can't. I'm just gonna say thank you, Mark, for inviting me here. I felt very, very comfortable. It was a pretty nice talk. It wasn't even like interview at all. it was just a podcast between friends, and I felt really good. And you know, we'll see what's the future about me. I don't know yet.
All right. Well, to everybody listening at home, thank you very much for tuning in this week. We will be back next week with another guest. So please, stay tuned in. Follow us, on Instagram and Twitter at Mark's Remarks Pod for all the latest updates, show updates, guest updates, and so on and so forth. And yeah, thanks everybody for listening, and I'll catch you all in the next one.